Eagles Entertainment.
With the 10th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by LifeBrand. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and we have got another day of analysis here on the Journey to the Draft podcast. We're going to start things off with the great Greg Cosell in pick six, where we've got another group of players that we're going to hit on, a six-pack of prospects with Greg. It's always great to catch up with Greg as he is neck-deep in film study as the draft gets closer and closer. So we're going to touch on a few players right at the top of the show with Greg. After that, we've got Saturday Scouting, where Ben Fennell and I, we're going to go through a little bit more of this quarterback class. I'm going to ask Ben to play some matchmaker here, try and talk about some of these top quarterbacks. What does that mean for the Eagles picking at number 10? We'll get into that with Ben at the top of that segment there in Draft Buzz. And then we've got our mock draft roundup, a new mock draft over at The Athletic. And then a question from you at home in our draft mailbag segment about a linebacker in this class. Now, again, that is the best way, if you have a question, to head on over to our Apple Podcast page, leave us that question, or you can leave us a mock draft. We broke down a mock draft earlier this week on the show. Whatever it is that you've got that you want us to hit on, just head on over to Apple Podcasts, leave it there in the comment box, and we will get to it here in an upcoming episode. That said, let's talk some prospects here. It's time now to catch up with Greg Cosell in Pick Six.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
All right, well, like I said, let's get into it now with Greg Cosell with some pick six. And we're going to go defense heavy here, Greg, as I know you are in the thick of things in the midst of your film study. We are under a month away until the NFL draft. How does that make you feel?
I don't know how it makes me feel, but I can tell you one thing. I'm not going to get to see anywhere near as many guys as I'd like, being, you know, a one-man scouting service as you are. But I'm getting there, you know, jumping around a bit, seeing a lot of different guys.
Well, we're gonna talk again defense heavy here. Two edge rushers, two linebackers, two corners to start this show off. And we've done a lot of offensive players. We've dabbled here on defense, but let's talk about a player that I do think has a really good shot at going in the top 10. And I don't know that a lot of people would have felt that way going into last season. I don't think that a lot of people necessarily were talking about it as the season was coming to a close, just because this player was on the sidelines for the national championship game, and that's Nolan Smith, the pass rusher from Georgia. Greg, you and I both, I believe you studied him over the summer, and I know that you've seen he played the first half of the year this year, so you got a chance to really see him be the guy in that defense. What are your thoughts on Nolan Smith and his projection to the NFL?
Yeah, I kept going back and forth in my mind on Nolan Smith, not in terms of whether he was a good prospect. The guy is ridiculously explosive. He's a great athlete. For those who aren't super familiar with him, because he was hurt, I guess he played 6-7 games this year, but obviously was hurt down the stretch, and maybe saw him at the combine and saw what just a ridiculously good athlete he is. Last summer when I watched him from 2021, I kept thinking to myself, yeah, I wonder if this guy would be better almost as a stacked linebacker, you know, be like a Fred Warner type player. And then the more I watched him this year in the 6-7 games he played, because I watched them all, you know, I kept saying to myself, man, this guy is such an explosive athlete. You know, he can rush the quarterback. He's not, I would say that he doesn't have a refined pass rush repertoire right now, Fran, but I think athletes like that don't come along very often. And I just think that he's going to end up being an edge player and a pass rusher. And man, he's just really, really explosive.
And that's the thing, too, is that while he is, you know, what did he come in? He came in right around 240 at the combine,
yeah,
you know, despite that size. I mean, he's powerful, too. Like, he generates movement on contact. I feel like that's something that kind of gets undersold with him, is people look at the frame and they're like, oh, like speed, speed, speed. And, of course, he has that speed, right? He's the heaviest player to ever break 4-4 at the combine. But I think when you look at Nolan Smith, he's got a power element to his game as well, and he's a really good run defender.
Yeah, and however you want to define power, because I don't think he's powerful in the sense of physical strength. I think he's powerful in the sense of velocity. And I hope that's somewhat clear as a difference. Like, I don't think, you know, like, he's not the kind of guy that's going to lift up a car. You know what I mean? But I think just the speed with which he moves generates such velocity that creates, you know, what we would call power, you know, because ultimately that's what we're saying. But he's so twitchy, he's so sudden, and he can bend. I mean, to me, there's so much more to get to with him as he plays in this league, and particularly with the proliferation of five-man fronts. He's going to play on the edge in a five-man front, and he's going to rush the quarterback, and he can drop into coverage because he's such a good athlete, which he did a lot at Georgia, by the way, so it's not going to be new to him. You know, I just think he's a really, really good prospect, and from everything we've learned, a phenomenal kid.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about like the intangibles off the field, that will certainly play to Nolan Smith's favor. And just to kind of crystallize what you were saying earlier about the differences and the types of power. I think if you look at Nolan Smith, and the easy way to kind of project that moving forward to the NFL is that he's not a guy that is the type of powerful athlete that you're going to line him up head up on a tackle. It's like a 4-eye or a 5 technique and expect instant pocket pushing presence.
Right.
But if he's playing with a runway as a 7 or as a wide 9, he's got that ability. Once he makes contact, that he's got that ability to create some push that way.
No, that's you hit it right on the head. That's exactly what I meant. The runway is a great word. That's a really good word to describe it. If he has a runway, that's where the power shows up because he develops speed and velocity.
Well, let's get into another guy that I think you share some of those same kind of explosive traits athletically off the edge, and that's Will McDonald from Iowa State. People are talking about Nolan Smith in the meat of round one. We talked earlier, potentially a top 10 type of talent. Will McDonald, probably more of the back end of round one, potentially in the meat of round two, depending on who you talk to. Again, this is a really traitsy player. Interested to get your thoughts on Will McDonald from Iowa State.
And he's an interesting guy for this reason, is that his sack numbers went down this year, and a lot of people might say, he's really not that good. But as you well know, the nature of the defense he played in at Iowa State, it was a lot of three-man fronts. He didn't always line up outside offensive tackles. He lined up at times as a 5 technique, a 4-eye, and that's not really what he is. He's close to 6'4". He's about 240. He's got tremendous arm length. He's a really good athlete. He's going to end up being an edge player in the NFL, as I think we would probably both agree. Wouldn't you see it that way?
Yeah, I was going to say, these sound like a lot of the things you were saying about Josh Sweat when he was coming out of Florida State.
It's very, very – and now Sweat weighed a little more.
Yes, he was a little bit bigger, yep.
Yeah, maybe not a ton more, but a little more for sure. And, Sweat played in a 4-point stance at Florida State inside the offensive tackle. And I remember talking to you about it, and we said, that's not going to happen in the NFL.
Yep.
Just like it won't happen with Will McDonald. He's another guy that could be seen as an edge player in a five-man front. If he goes to a team that doesn't play five-man fronts and sees him as an edge rusher, he'd probably begin his career as a sub-front player on the edge. But he can bend. He's got burst. He's got flexibility. I mean, he's a guy that he's a loose, sudden athlete. He's got that length. He's got fluidity. I mean, this guy is a really, really good pass rusher.
Yeah, I think when you look at McDonald, the traits are going to be really, really attractive for a lot of people when you're searching for that juice off the edge. And I agree with you in that he is a pure edge player moving forward into the NFL. Let's move now to the second level of the defense. We'll talk about linebackers here, and we'll go to Drew Sanders, a really interesting player in that just a one-year starter, a one-year player at the off-ball position, played at Arkansas this year, but a transfer, a former five-star recruit at Alabama who was kind of a backup edge rusher, backup Sam linebacker for them, was hoping to get a little bit of extra playing time, entered the transfer portal, goes to the Razorbacks, and I believe led the team and was one of the leaders in the SEC in tackles this year. What have you seen from Drew Sanders? Because it feels like there are some that are really, really high on what his potential could be in the NFL.
I would probably fall into that category. I mean, as you said, first time he played stack backer, didn't look like the first time. I thought that his ability to key and diagnose, his play recognition, I thought that was really good. And the result was he had a quick trigger in the run game. He showed the ability both to take on blocks and make plays. He showed the short area explosiveness to slip blocks without losing gap integrity. I love the way he played downhill. There was no hesitation in his game. He had great play speed and pursuit range, made a lot of plays running down backs, receivers, quarterbacks. And the added dimension to his game, which is going to be fascinating how teams see him, is he has higher level pass rush ability. And you saw that numerous times. Predominantly is an edge rusher, but there are times where he lined up on the edge and then also stunted inside and worked against guards. And he showed a suddenness to a short area movement. He featured an arm over move. I mean, he could rush the quarterback too, because that's what he started at really at Alabama, even though he didn't get a lot of playing time. So I really like this kid. And to me, he'd be an ascending type player, Fran, because this is only his first year playing stack backer. And it didn't look like his first year playing stack backer.
To me, like, that's why, you know, when you get into the middle of round one and a team, I think they're picking at 14, the New England Patriots, it would make a lot of sense, you know, for Drew Sanders, because we know that they've liked to utilize their linebackers in that way. You know, and I really, I guess a lot of that will come down to what are Nick Saban's opinions of Drew Sanders? What will he say to Bill Belichick about him, right? Because I'm sure they will have that discussion. But Sanders, I think from a skill set standpoint, certainly matches that. I guess the big thing that he'll have to kind of get past for not just Bill Belichick, for a lot of NFL coaches, a lot of missed tackles this year. So do you chalk that up to inexperience, or is that something that will be a chronic issue for him moving forward?
And we don't know the answer to that. Yep, you know, exactly. But one other point about him is he's over 6'4", and that's a trait. He is a big guy. You know, and he tested really well. I mean, his short shuttle time for a tall guy was really good. You know, so to me, there's a lot there. And I think it's just beginning, particularly since it was his first year playing this position.
All right, well, let's talk through one of his former teammates with the Crimson Tide, and that's Henry Toyotoyo, who was another five-star recruit, goes to Tennessee, becomes a freshman starter. He ended up starting 50 games in his career. First two in Knoxville with the Volunteers, the last two with the Crimson Tide in Alabama, playing for Nick Saban, has played a ton of football, has been very productive. What are your thoughts on Henry Toyotoyo, and how do you project him moving forward?
And he came out of National Power De La Salle High School in California, too. So he was a big-time recruit when he went to Tennessee. You know, I kept going back and forth on him, and I probably – well, of course, Alabama, I always end up watching a ton of their defense because they have so many guys. So even though I wasn't watching him every game, you know, I probably watched him singularly for six games, but then saw him in other games, you know, as I'm watching the other guys. You know, I think he's kind of a pretty smooth athlete. I think he's pretty fluid. I think he plays under control. I think he has a feel for the game. He doesn't look hurried in what he's doing. He's comfortable. You know, I don't think he has high-level traits, though. He's not a big physical guy. You know, he's under 230. You know, I think he didn't play through contact and as well as I think he needs to as an inside stack backer. I thought that for a guy that's played a lot of football, I thought that there were too many plays in which he didn't see it as quickly as he needed to, and the result was he got caught up in traffic and the bodies and could not get to the ball. You know, so I think that he's probably more of a box linebacker than a speed and range linebacker. You know, I didn't look at him and go, wow, look at that inside-outside line to sideline range. He didn't strike me as that guy. He's fluid and he's comfortable, but I didn't think he had a ton of juice, you know, playing that way. So I'm not sure what he is. I think he would have to be a base defense linebacker. And the question is, you know, and we've seen that in Philly. We just saw T.J. Edwards have a great year, okay? No one would say he's a higher level athlete for an inside backer. So is there a place for those guys depending upon team and scheme? There is, you know. Obviously, Edwards played behind a great D-line, you know. So Toyotoyo, to me, becomes team and scheme specific.
You know, and the way you kind of talked about him, it really kind of brings to the point not just about Henry Toyotoyo, but about just this whole process, right, in terms of trying to project these guys moving forward. It's like, okay, like this is what I think he can be. What is that skill? What does his skill set need to be in order to be that in the NFL, right? And so that's what I would say for all of our listeners that, you know, like to watch these players and like to try and project and evaluate these guys is, okay, what is this guy going to be in the NFL? Not what he did in college, but what is this guy going to be in the NFL? What traits does he have in order to do that job well? And if you start to have that same question, you're like, man, like, at the end of the day, like, I'm not sure what he is. Like, you know, and this, you could say this again for any position. I think that's where that brings into question, okay, well, how do you project, how do you put a valuation on what that guy is going to be in terms of where he's going to get drafted when it comes to draft weekend at the end of April?
And, you know, you just hit it right on the head. And the ancillary point to that is team and scheme. You know, one of the main differences, as you know, between scouts and evaluators and coaches is scouts and evaluators are very focused on traits and measurables. Okay, not that coaches aren't interested in that at all. Of course they are. You know, you'd always rather have a guy with better traits than less traits. But coaches have schemes. And coaches tend to coach what they know, what they've coached for years, what they're comfortable with. Coaches don't change their schemes year to year. They might tweak a few things, but, you know, a guy who runs a specific scheme is not going to run an altogether different scheme the next year. So coaches think more in terms of scheme adaptability. So one coach might look at a guy like Toyo Toyo and say, hey, in my scheme, you know what? He can fit as my stack as a stack backer. Another coach might say, hey, in my scheme, I don't think his traits necessarily fit. We need someone with better traits, you know, so you don't know the answer to that. And I try to think about that, and I know you do when I watch tape, is how does a guy fit in the league? Like you mentioned, you know, Drew Sanders with Bill Belichick, you know, whether that's the case or not, who knows? But, you know, I think that's why, because there's not that many transcendent players who just have amazing traits, you know, there's very few of those guys. It does come down to how different teams see players in the context of their schemes. And this year's draft, I think, will be very much like that, Fran. I think you might agree. I think there are players in this draft that a team could have 10th on their board and another team could have the same player 40th on their board.
You know, it's funny. I feel like a position that best kind of encapsulates that is the cornerback group in this class, because there are a bunch of names being talked about in the first round and how those guys come off the board.
Yep.
Who goes at number 9 versus who goes at number 38, right? I think there's a lot of variance there in terms of trying to predict that. And we talked about that last week with Ben Fennell here on this episode of the podcast. And now I want to kind of talk about that with you, because we're going to round this out with two corners, and we're going to talk through the universally, like a top one or two corner in this class for most people. But again, it's not going to be the case for everybody. And that's Devin Witherspoon from Illinois, who's, you know, not the traitsiest corner. You know, we talked about Christian Gonzalez in the past, you and he's got everything you're looking for to play, you know, man coverage in the NFL, all the athleticism, all the physical tools that you're looking for. Witherspoon doesn't necessarily have that, but he's got other things in his back pocket as well.
Well, Witherspoon is a pain in the ass in a good way.
right.
You know, and I think coaches will love him because he plays with a high level competitiveness and swagger and intensity, and you can feel it just when you watch the tape. You know, even though we're not watching TV versions and we're close up, you can feel it watching the tape. I'd be very curious as to how, again, this could be different with teams, Fran. I'd be curious as to whether he's seen as an outside corner or a slot corner. Because, you know, in his 3 years at Illinois, he played predominantly on the outside, but he did play over 200 snaps in the slot, and he's 180 pounds. Now, you can play outside at 100, you know, give or take at 180 pounds. You know, we see someone like Denzel Ward at 182, 183, who's been a quality outside corner. Now, he's twitchier than Witherspoon.
No doubt.
You know, he's more sudden than Witherspoon, although I think Witherspoon does have quick, sudden explosive feet, and he's so aggressive and decisive in how he reacts. But I think that when you watch him, and he didn't run, and I don't think we have a 40 time on him. Not that that's the be all and end
all. He didn't do anything at the pro day either. Yeah.
Oh, so we don't have that information. You know, just watching the tape, I thought there were times he got beat over the top, and even times when the ball wasn't thrown. You know, that's why you have to watch the games. But I think that would be a concern of mine playing on the outside. I think he gets beat over the top a little bit too much. Now, in off coverage, I thought he was phenomenal playing routes in front of him. He had explosive plan and drive, click and close, whatever term people want to use, to impact both the receiver and the throw. You can't help loving the way this guy plays. You just can't help loving it. I mean, the guy's intense, competitive. I think he could line up both inside, outside, depending on your point of view. He's a strong physical run defender. I think he'll be a quality NFL corner. I'm just, in my mind, I'm not sure whether he's an outside guy or an inside guy.
You know, it's funny, as you were kind of going through your evaluation of him, and I was kind of thinking, who are you describing in the NFL? And I never thought about this as a comp, and I don't even know that if it is a perfect comp. But if he became Kenny Moore, right, for the Colts, if he became Kenny Moore, like, would that be a win with the 15th
pick? Kenny Moore plays, you know, he plays outside in their base and goes into the slot in their sub, and you know, he wasn't a high draft choice, and maybe a lot of people don't know the name Kenny Moore who don't follow the league closely. But Kenny Moore has been, in my view, a top five, you know, slot corner, because that's where he plays the majority of the time. You know, given the way the league is. I think
he was 5'10", 185 coming out of Valdosta State a few years back.
There so you go, which is very similar to what Witherspoon is. And yeah. Kenny Moore is also a very physical, intense, competitive player. That's a really good comp, Fran.
I'm writing that one down. It literally, as you were talking, I was like, okay, like who is a player that Greg, you know, that your description kind of matched up with?
And I'm going to use that just so you know. I'm going to steal and act like I thought of it.
Just mention the Journey of the Draft podcast and whatever you use. Well, let's talk through a guy where size is not going to be a question, and that's Joey Porter Jr. from Penn State. We'll stay in the Big Ten here and finish it up with a Nittany Lion. Joey Porter Jr., obviously his father, the longtime Pro Bowler with the Pittsburgh Steelers. What are your thoughts on Joey Porter Jr.?
I like Joey Porter Jr. It's interesting watching Penn State. I felt like he had to watch so many games, you know, and they didn't play a lot of teams with great passing games. And he, you know, they use a lot of players. He doesn't play every snap, but a lot of guys don't play every snap for Penn State. It's just the way they play. But the traits and the attributes are off the charts. He's over 6'2". His arm length is like that of an offensive lineman. It's 34 inches. That's absurd. So you're dealing with a guy that has higher level athletic traits, extensive experience playing press coverage. I think he's at his best playing press man. He's physical. He wants to be physical. He'll shove you right out of bounds. But I think he's also smooth and fluid. He's, you know, just because he's 6'2 and a half and 193. It's not like he's 210 or 215. You know, I think to me, the more I kept watching him, I thought he fit the classic profile of the boundary corner, Fran. I think you can line him up on the boundary side versus, you know, the boundary X receivers in the NFL, and I think that's what he can be. And I think he could be really good at that. You know, to be honest, I wish on tape, and I kept watching games probably more than I needed to, and I kept watching, you know, waiting for something to happen. The ball wasn't thrown to him very much at all. And it's easy to say, well, he doesn't have big production, but the ball wasn't thrown to him.
It's funny. It was kind of like the Sauce Gardner conversation from a year ago. And you could point to some similarities there in terms of the way that those two guys operate. Refresh my memory. Did you study him in the summer as well?
Who?
Joey Porter Jr.
I did not. So let me see. I don't think I did. Let me look at my notes. I did not.
Okay, got it. Yeah, that's why I wanted to see if you felt a lot different based off what you saw from a year ago.
Was there a difference?
Well, I think the big thing, you know, that a lot of people will point to is the fact that, number one, he's only got one career pick, like you mentioned, and the lack of production is one thing people will point to. And then also, he had a bunch of penalties. I mean, he had 10 penalties a year ago, and he had, I think it was only three or four this past year as a junior. I think when you're dealing with leggier corners, taller, longer guys, especially the ones that are as high cut as Porter is, you're going to have some clunkiness in transition, and some guys can get, especially if you're an aggressive, in your face up corner, those guys are going to get a little grabby, and so Porter can definitely be guilty of that at times.
And you know what? I made that point in my weakness section. I said tendency to be too handsy and grabby both early in the route and through the route must get that cleaned up. Some guys get it cleaned up, no problem. Other guys, it's a struggle because that's the way they played. And in college, you're allowed to do that. Look, in college, how many times with guys who are physical press man corners, Fran, do we see them, 12 yards down the field shove guys out of bounds? Yep. And while we love the competitiveness and the intensity and the physicality, you can't do that in the NFL.
So just for our listeners' sake, like, is there anybody in the league that plays that? Like, they don't really let you do that, obviously.
No, they don't let you do that.
Yeah. So, is that something that – is there a player that kind of comes to mind where you're like, oh, man, like, that really hurt this guy in terms of his transition?
Oh, man. I know that over the years I have marked the same weakness thing about other players, and I'm right now I can't think of it right offhand. But I know there are players that we both said that about. Do you have someone in mind?
No, there's no one that comes right off the top, but I figured I'd hit you up with that. But
Nothing – But I think Joey Porter has phenomenal traits, and that's what's going to get him drafted. I mean, how many corners? There's another one, too, and I can't remember who it is. Another corner has 34-inch. It might be Julius Brents.
Julius Brents, yeah. Kansas State, yep.
Yeah, but, I can recall, and I'm sure there are others, over the years, but none come to mind other than Brents this year that have 34-inch arms. I mean, that's a trait. That's a big-time trait.
No question. Well, it's a good group of corners. You know, we talked about that last week here on the show. You and I have done a handful. I'm sure we'll do a few more before we get to the draft.
I mean, there's other guys that I'm sure you really liked, that I really liked. You know, at some point we should talk Clark Phillips from Utah, who's another fun watch. There's plenty of corners.
Yeah, no question. And Phillips, more in the Witherspoon category in terms of the size. So we'll have that conversation another day here on Pick 6 on the Journey of the Draft podcast presented by Life Brand. Greg, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Rand.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, well, again, great stuff there from Greg as we now welcome in Ben Fennell for some Draft Buzz. And Ben, we're going to keep the quarterback conversation going here. I broke down the top quarterbacks in the class with Dane Brugler earlier this week. And so the exercise for you at the top of this segment, we're going to take a look at these top five quarterbacks. So C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, and then Hendon Hooker from Tennessee. I want you to play matchmaker here with these five guys at the top of this draft. I want you to pick one team that you think they will end up with. So where you think ultimately they end up. And then two, what team would you want to see them end up with? Whether it's, you know, supporting cast, the scheme, the coaching, whatever it is, the entire situation. So it could be two teams per player. Potentially it could be the same team. But let's talk through the first one. Let's go through us. We'll start with C.J. Stroud from Ohio State.
So C.J. Stroud, I've been kind of pounding the table for. I think his fit with Frank Reich and the Carolina Panthers would just be flawless. And reflecting on Frank's past few years with the Colts, variety of different quarterbacks from Carson Wentz to Matt Ryan to Phillip Rivers, and then his time with the Philadelphia Eagles with Nick Foles and Carson Wentz as well. So you're getting more of a pocket passing type, a pure progression type of passer that is also going to have a scheme that leans on the run game, which then opens up play action concepts and moving the pocket, and all of which I think C.J. Stroud would absolutely excel in. I don't think he needs to be in a shotgun, air raid, point and shoot type of system. He's a guy that can execute from under center, turn his back to the defense, escape trouble as he needs to. But his accuracy, rhythm, elimination, his placement, his coverage ID, I just think it's going to fit the Frank Reich want and need out of a quarterback. And I think really embodies the mix of all those guys in there. And I know there are some pretty lofty names in the Matt Ryans and Phillip Rivers of the world and Carson Wentz. And that's the type of guy I think you're getting, maybe a slightly higher version of all those guys as well. And the lack of running and scrambling and quarterback design run, that's the type of quarterback I think Frank Reich really covets, a guy that's going to go and exhaust his progressions and outlets through the pass concept first and almost be that reluctant scrambler, which is the type of quarterback I prefer as well. So I think that Carolina, the C.J. Stroud fit, it checks a lot of boxes, Fran.
Yeah, and even when you look at, like, Thomas Brown, you know, coming from the Rams, if he brings some of those elements to that offense in terms of a lot of the play action, pocket movement things, I mean, C.J. Stroud, would, you know, it fits that like a glove, just like you mentioned. Do you think that's ultimately where he does end up, or is that just where you'd love him to end up?
A little bit of both. I think that's going to be the best fit. I think he's quarterback one, in my opinion, and I think it's a great marriage as far as what they need in Carolina, the type of quarterback I think the scheme and the coaching staff covets, and a high-level prospect. So I know there's going to be some fool's gold and smoke and mirrors up until draft time, as there always is. And they may not even be set on who they want at the moment. They may know right now, and it could change in a month. And we've seen that before. But I think for a variety of reasons, I expect C.J. Stroud's name to be called first when it's all said and done.
Well, with that in mind, let's now go to Bryce Young, who a lot of people right now feel like he could go number two to Houston. Is that what you think ends up happening here if C.J. Stroud goes one?
It has to happen. And, you know, I think Houston is obviously building from scratch right now, and they have a lot of young parts around, and they have a first-time head coach, and their offensive coordinator, Bobby Slowick, has never called plays before. They have a lot of mending, molding, flexible future kind of ahead, and I think Bryce Young, being that CEO type that is going to come in and pretty much say what he wants to run, what makes him the most comfortable, and build the playbook together with the coaching staff, as I think this entire organization is kind of being rebuilt from the ashes. And sure, you have some great pillars like a Laremy Tunsil and some great young pieces you were able to, you know, bring out of the package last year, like Kenyon Green and Stingley and Jalen Petrie and X, Y, and Z. But this is a young, rebuilding team that I think is willing to ebb and flow and adjust their playbook and design to the talent that finds their way on their roster. So I think a Bryce Young type who is an outlier, and you're going to have to do some things slightly different schematically to make him comfortable, would be a great fit on a team that's kind of a blank page right now.
You know, I think it's interesting, too, when you talk about Bryce Young. You know, a lot of people talk, obviously, the size is the big question, right? And so it's continuing to try to build up that offensive line, try and make things as clear and decisive for him in the pocket as possible. Having Laremy Tunsil is a great start. You have Titus Howard at right tackle. Feels like he's settled in to a nice home. He spent a first-round pick on Kenyon Green a year ago. They traded for Shaq Mason here this offseason. So they're continuing to kind of build up that offensive line. You kind of solve that center spot, and I think you're kind of cooking with gas there.
Yeah, absolutely. And trying to peel back some layers here, and everyone's to project forward. Well, Bobby Slowick is their offensive coordinator. This guy's only 35 years old. Yes, he is son of Bob Slowick, who has been in the NFL for decades and decades. But Bobby Slowick is on the younger side. He's actually my age, born in 87, and has only ever been with Kyle Shanahan. So projecting forward, I think you're going to get an offense that wants to lean and be a foundational run scheme, be an outside zone type of scheme, and then work in some RPOs and throw the ball to the backside of the backfield and do a lot of those Kyle Shanahan type concepts. But now this is the first time Slowick has been away from that. So he gets to now put together the playbook how he wants to. So you want to project forward and kind of guess. But when you have these young guys that have never really been the head guy or a head coach on a side of a ball, it's exciting to see what they're going to do to make him an individual. So I don't expect this to be the entire Shanahan playbook, but I'm excited to see what Slowick's going to whip up for whatever quarterback.
You know what just kind of clicked for me, too? Who's the receiver that they just spent a second-round pick on a year ago? A guy that caught a lot of passes from Bryce Young. And John Mechie, who's coming back.
That's a great connection, yep.
Was it lymphoma that he had that caused him to miss this year? He had some form of cancer. So, you know, it seemed like all the reports were that he would be, you know, suiting up for Houston again this year. But, that's a nice little safety blanket there.
I like they added some vets, too, in the free agency, like the Robert Woods types of guys. And just because you're rebuilding doesn't mean it has to just be a youth campaign. I think adding in some viable veteran presence to show them how to practice, how to show up to games, how to be a consummate professional is part of the rebuild as well. So I like seeing some of the mix of veterans added as well.
Yeah, there was a it sounds like he could be ready for the offseason program, Mechie. So that'll be a nice little connection there if Bryce Young does end up in Houston. All right, so most mock drafts have C.J. Stroud number one to Carolina. Most mock drafts have Bryce Young number two to Houston. This is where the conversation gets interesting, and we'll start with the guy who's having his pro day today. I think it's concluded at this point as we're recording Thursday afternoon. Anthony Richardson from the Florida Gators. Where do you think he ends up? Let me ask you that question first. Where do you think he ultimately ends up when the dust settles at the end of April?
I think the Colts are going to move up from 4 to 3 and prevent any other team from leapfrogging them, and they're going to go and get Anthony Richardson with the third overall pick. And I think he looked pretty good in that Lucas Oil Dome. And let's just keep him in there that, after he worked out at Indianapolis at the Combine, let's keep him in Indy. New coach and Shane Steichen, bring over that Eagles playbook he ran and developed Jalen Hurts. I would also like to see a little bit of that Cam Newton 2015 playbook. I would like to see a little bit of the Harbaugh, Greg Roman with Colin Kaepernick playbook as well. This might be, Fran, the most athletic, gifted specimen we've ever seen at the quarterback position. And it might not even be close, to be perfectly honest with you. His height, weight, speed, explosiveness is really at a level we've never seen before. And I'm really excited to see him go to a potential offense like Philadelphia ran last year. And I think that would suit him perfectly.
You know, it's funny, as you're saying that, and I'm kind of like, again, it's kind of cycling through thinking about this. Shane Steichen obviously worked here in Philadelphia last year for the last couple of years, and his quarterback coach, Brian Johnson, helped recruit Anthony Richardson to Florida. So I wonder if he's kind of tapping into that resource as well, getting a little bit more intel. Obviously,
and one more connection, Colts QB coach is Cam Turner, which is nephew of Norv Turner. Yep. I think, I don't know if he's brothers with Scott Turner, but also related to Scott Turner, XYZ. He was in Carolina in 2015 with Cam Newton and that whole program. So I'm sure he has some feelings and flavors, too, about the type of quarterback he wants. So a lot of interesting boxes here to check. I think that was Mike Shula's offense, if I'm not mistaken. But Cam Turner was definitely involved.
All right, so then let me ask you this now. So Anthony Richardson, you feel like that's going to be the move. He ends up in Indianapolis. Where would you like to see him end up based off of, you know, the supporting cast and the scheme, the situation? Because obviously that will be big for Anthony Richardson and his development.
I think Indy would be a great fit. I think behind that somewhat sturdy offensive line, Ryan Kelly and Quentin Nelson, let's figure out that left tackle if it's going to be the Central Michigan and Bernard Raymond or not for the future. But I think with a Jonathan Taylor and some of the tough guy parts like they have and Michael Pittman, and let's get some speed elements on the outside, and let's see if Paris Campbell can keep developing, add some young guys as well. I think Indianapolis would be a really, really good fit for Anthony Richardson. Not only just the clean slate, I love seeing a new head coach come in with a new quarterback and that whole marriage kind of coming off the ground together. So I just think there's a lot of needs and wants that kind of fit both of these, you know, both team and player.
All right, so big question now for all of our Eagles fans, listeners, because obviously the more quarterbacks that go in the top nine, that benefits the Eagles, right? Picking at number 10, they're not going to be selecting a quarterback there, so the more non-quarterbacks that can be bumped down the board, the better. So we all figure Stroud, Young, Richardson going to go in the top nine. I think the big question as we sit here now at the end of March is Will Levis going to be part of those first nine picks or not? Where do you think Will Levis ends up? And I guess the question, although it'll be a two-part question, what team do you think ends up with Will Levis, and do they take that player in the top nine? Like if he falls, let's say it's a team outside, whether it's Tennessee or Baltimore or Washington or Minnesota or Tampa Bay, do they have to make a move up to get him, or does he fall into outside the top 10 to be that selection?
I say he falls outside the top 10 right now, and if I had to be a betting man at this moment, I'll say he lands with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay.
Which is right in the middle of that first round. Yep. I think they need somebody to go into 2023 competing with Kyle Trask. I don't expect this to be a competitive team heading into 2023. So this could be the year to take a flyer on a talented quarterback and see what you could get through kind of a – it's going to be a clunky season. And maybe he doesn't have to play right away. Maybe the team's slightly behind the eight ball, and he could get some really good reps and experience without a lot of pressure. So I think that Tampa Bay situation is an absolute live wire type of team. As we all know, they are transitioning away from the Tom Brady era. I think they are in cap hell as well because they kind of mortgaged their future a little bit to win that Super Bowl. But they've admitted it too. And I think it's worked out for them. A lot of teams would do that exchange of kind of nuking a future year or two to get that Super Bowl win. And they did it pretty flawlessly. So now you're paying the price and it might not be a competitive roster. That's okay. But what do you do with the capital now is really important for the future. I think a Will Levis add into a team like that, let Kyle Trask see what he's got as well. This is what you do in these types of seasons.
It does feel like, as we sit here again at this point in the calendar, that, a month out, it feels like Will Levis is not going to go in the top 10. It feels like that's been a lot of the buzz lately. I know Bucky Brooks over at NFL Media, he just put out his latest mock draft. He had Will Levis falling out of round one altogether. And so I think that you'll start to hear a little bit more buzz about that being a possibility. Now, we know, but this is the thing. We said this a year ago, right? We said, hey, there's questions about quarterback ABC, but those guys are going to go. They're going to go. They're going to go. And what happened? They didn't go. A bunch of those guys fell to day two of the draft, or sometimes even day three of the draft. So, is that going to happen with Will Levis? I think it's certainly possible. Could he go like number seven, or could a team trade up to number nine to get him? Also possible, right? I think all the cards are on the table there. You mentioned Tampa as the likely landing spot. Where would you like to see him end up?
I would really like to see him go somewhere with a team that just got a quarterback for the season. I don't think Will is ready to play, and that's okay. You know who also wasn't ready to play? Patrick Mahomes. And he sat for 16 games and played the final week, and then he was the starter. I think that's okay. You don't have to throw him right into the fire. So even going to a New Orleans Saints with a Derek Carr, and I know they brought back Jameis on a very small deal. I don't think that's too consequential. Or going to a Seattle
Minnesota
type of team.
Oh, yeah.
Minnesota type of team that's looking to the future after Kirk Cousins, Seattle after Geno. I think sitting behind somebody could be good for him, Fran.
Yeah, I think, you know, Minnesota does make a ton of sense. You know, just because I think when you look at, you know, Kirk Cousins, he's on the final year of that deal. They've got the ability to get out of it after this season. And then you look at, obviously, the connection there coaching-wise. You know, Kevin O'Connell worked with Liam Cohen, who got the most out of Will Levis at Kentucky, back in 2021. And so those guys have a relationship. Try and, you know, tap into that the best you can. And you get that extra year with him on the bench as well. He's a little bit of an older quarterback prospect, but I think when you look at Will Levis, that would be a good situation for him moving forward.
And really quick, before you put those top four to bed, the teams that really scare me, the Atlanta Falcons and the Washington Commanders, as far as I don't know what their intent or view is for this season. And when I talk about the Colts trading up to 3 from 4 to make sure nobody leapfrogs them, those are the teams that I'm talking about. I know there's some ownership change in Washington. I know, obviously, the Atlanta Falcons have Desmond Ridder and they have someone to play. They're teams that could be looking to push that throttle forward and saying, you know what, let's make a, you know, a king's ransom for that pick and change the culture in the team instantly. So there's some live wire teams out there that I'm a little bit afraid of as well.
Yeah, and you know, Atlanta is a great example of a team that has been, you know, over the years since that regime has come in with Terry Fontenot at general manager, Arthur Smith at head coach. They've been fairly tough to read in the draft. You know, they had the fourth pick a couple years ago when they took Kyle Pitts, and it was draft day, and people were not really sure about which direction they were going to go. So I think when you look at them, they are a very interesting team. The Tennessee Titans as well. You know, Daniel Jeremiah kind of floated that as a potential trade up from 11 to 3 to potentially take an Anthony Richardson or a Will Levis. You know, in Tennessee, remember where the Arizona Cardinals' new GM Monty Austenford come from? Came from the Titans, and so there's going to be you know, some bridges there that are easy to connect. You know, so don't count them out of the quarterback race. That was a good point.
Those Falcons, they're kind of, yeah, like you're saying, ebbing and flowing in the way a lot of people aren't paying interior linemen. We paid Chris Lindstrom. A lot of people aren't paying safeties. Gave Jesse Bates a huge contract. So certainly Atlanta Falcons willing to do some things that are a little against the trends of the league.
All right, last one here. Hendon Hooker, where do you think he ends up? Does he get into round one, or is he going to be a day two pick?
I think he's going to be a day two pick, and I really like Hendon Hooker. I like him on the field, off the field. But to see a Mike Tannenbaum project him 5th overall in his mock draft, I don't see anybody taking him 5th overall, a 25-year-old quarterback off an ACL tear from a very specific scheme in college. Too many things working against him for that level of capital. I think he's a day two type of pick. And the team, if I had to call my shot right now, Fran, the Arizona Cardinals, I think go behind Kyler Murray, a team that, you know, obviously Kyler got hurt last year and threw in a bunch of quarterbacks to survive the season, from Colt McCoy to signing a David Blau, I think that week in playing him. They can use some more security behind Kyler Murray. And I think, you know, Kyler is going to want to execute that similar type of spread offense that Cliff had for him. I know it's a new regime in there and there's going to be some things differently, but I think Hendon could fit what Kyler does. I know we all see Kyler as that mobile spark plug quarterback, but the structure of the offense, I think, will fit Hendon Hooker. And he's a guy that is mobile, can escape, can execute some design runs. Obviously not the level of Kyler Murray. We know how special he is, but I think an Arizona fit could suit Hendon Hooker well.
Interesting. So that's where you think he could end up. Is there a situation where you look at Hooker and you're like, all right, with his skill set, the offense he comes from, what he needs moving forward to best get the most out of Hooker, where would you love to see him go?
That's a really good question. Again, I think just sitting somewhere behind an incumbent starter. So those same kind of fits for Levis, New Orleans behind Derek Carr, Seattle behind Geno. You know, if the Vikings want to go up and take him and, you know, take a flyer on a talented kid to see if you have a future behind a Kirk Cousins type of guy, who's behind Jared Goff in Detroit. I could see a team like the Lions in particular really being a landing spot for a Hendon Hooker that's comfortable with a 2023 starter in Jared Goff. But just taking that flyer on a great backup for the season, and then let's see if we have some future talent down the road. I think teams like the Detroit Lions with incumbent starters are going to consider him in rounds 2 and 3.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, man. And the possibility definitely exists where all 5 of these guys go in round 1. There's a possibility that only 3 go. There's a possibility that 4 go in the top 10. As always, it's going to be fun to kind of track that, and some huge Eagles implications as well with how many of them go in those first 9 picks. So let's put that quarterback conversation to bed. And before we get into our mock draft for the week, I always kind of ask you, as you are preparing diligently for draft weekend with your work with NFL Media, The most fun tape you've studied this week, and why is it another Northwestern player?
Running out of Wildcats to talk about, but it's got to be Adebare, you know? No, we're going to go. A couple guys I was watching yesterday. I watched DeMario Douglas out of Liberty. Very easy stamp on his evaluation. Day three version is Zay Flowers. Same height, weight, speed, usage in the offense, double moves, vertical gear, yet they want to put the ball in his hands as well. They put him in the backfield. I think he scored a 70-yard touchdown against UConn on outside zone play. So he's a guy that can do a lot of things at all three levels, just in that diminutive size. Tested very similar to Zay Flowers as well. Literally clones as far as height, weight, speed. Just a day three version of him, and that's okay. And then two NC State Wolfpack guys I've been watching that are rising up boards after their pro days. Isaiah Moore. I love this kid, Fran. 6'2", 240. Let's just go back to a former Wolfpack linebacker in Jermaine Pratt. Looks a lot like him. Has the body armor to survive. I need linebackers that have some body armor. You got to be able to take a bruising against these NFL running backs. This kid's got some size. He's got some speed. 5-year starter, 3,000 snaps played, excellent run stuffer, great quick trigger, captain of the team. Probably would have come out last year, but he got hurt halfway through the season. So I don't feel like he was his best self heading into the draft process. So he went back for a 6th year. He was a 5th-year player, registered early on, so he's slightly older. But he's going to be ready to play in the NFL. Great third-round type of player right now in a down linebacker class. And Chandler Zavala, right now I'm watching him 2021 as he worked with Ike Ekwonu. Top 10 pick to the Panthers. He was left guard. Ike Ekwonu was left tackle. Fran, they mowed through defenders. They gave Bam Knight so many beautiful lanes to run through. Those guys carved up defensive backs on the second and third level. Absolute maulers. Zavala, excellent zone guard and another down class and interior offensive lineman. Some people like Zavala as a top 50 player despite not getting a combine invite. So NC State Wolfpack, they have a reputation of putting very strong players into the NFL, very NFL-ready bodies. These are two guys that look like they're ready to play on Sundays.
I love that. Zavala is a guy that I actually have not studied yet, and I'm excited. I think next week I'm going to be doing my final dive into some of these offensive linemen, and he will be a tape I will definitely be watching. DeMario Douglas is a guy that I just actually watched this week, and I really liked his tape. I think he's an NFL player all day. I think he'd get into the role discussion, certainly, and like what is the ultimate impact, but I think he's going to play in the league. He's a really fun player.
And really quick, Fran, I don't know why. I had a slight stigma. I'm like, Liberty, all right, I'm going to watch some schools I might not covet very highly. No, Liberty plays some dogs. They play BYU, Arkansas, Wake Forest. There's tons of Division I Power 5 schools on their schedule. So I think Liberty is in the group of five. I know they made some moves, I think, with their program over the last 5-10 years. But they play some legit competition. And DeMario Douglas seemed to show up every week. Really good player.
And we will be doing, you and I usually do this every year, where we'll do like an episode. I guess we only have a couple of weeks left to do it. But all right, if you miss on this guy in round one, you can get this version in day three. So maybe earmark the Zay Flowers, DeMario Douglas. Well, actually, no, shelf that one. You're not allowed to use it for when we have that discussion.
I'll get some fresh ones for you.
And do that one.
And by the way, Liberty's independent. I just looked it up real fast. I didn't realize that's why they can schedule the gauntlet that they want to schedule. But they don't just have a bunch of, you know, Marys and cupcakes on there. They have some really tough games, and he showed up every week. Really fun tape.
Yeah, it's always a good schedule. We talked about that last year with Malik Willis. It's like, yeah, you can find them against good opponents, and certainly that's the case with Douglas, who was productive again.
I also love when you study a quarterback, Fran, and then the next year you study the guy that was on the receiving end of a lot of those passes.
Yeah, right.
So now it's suddenly like, oh, that's why that guy was so wide open. Okay.
Yeah, right. Exactly right. All right, let's get to our mock draft. A lot of options this week. Jordan Reed dropped a 7-rounder over at ESPN. But I wanted to do this one. This is a fun one here from The Athletic. Nate Tice and Deontay Lee, they tag-teamed and did a mock draft together. One guy did the evens, one guy did the odds. And we'll just dive into this mock draft. It's a fun one here from two very well-respected analysts over with The Athletic. The top five here. Carolina going quarterback C.J. Stroud. At number two, the Houston Texans select Anthony Richardson, the quarterback from Florida, so not Bryce Young. The Arizona Cardinals select pass rusher Will Anderson. Bryce Young ends up in Indianapolis with the Colts at number four. And the Seattle Seahawks at number five with Jalen Carter, the defensive tackle from Georgia. Ben, I mean, that's the thing is that, like, Anthony Richardson is definitely a wild card. Like, you know, we all expect that it's going to be Stroud and Young 1 and 2. But, it would not shock me if he somehow cracked that.
I think you just need to have that conversation with yourself and collectively of, we are talking about one of the more gifted physical athletic specimens we have ever studied and projected at the quarterback position. We don't say that every class. We just left a class where we're talking about Kenny Pickett, you know, and a middle first round guy. Wasn't a great quarterback class. This year, it's very exciting, and this is the types of conversations and lack of consensus that raise these mocks and these types of boggle mock drafts that shake up prospects, and they have different landing spots. But I just like the narrative right after Richardson that you're going to see all over the timelines. Bryce Young falling, Bryce Young skidding, and he's probably going to go two picks later. But it's going to be an absolute sky is falling if he doesn't go one or two. It's going to be nothing but narratives of Bryce Young is falling. Where is he going to go? How far does the fall last? How long will it last? Someone's going to grab him pretty quick. So I like the projections here. And if Anthony Richardson did go two, Fran, not going to get a whole lot of surprise from me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that Bryce Young conversation would last all of about like 8 minutes because I don't think it would take too long for a team to make that move. Let's go down to the Eagles pick at number 10, and the pick here from Nate and from Deontay, and Deontay was the one who made the pick, is Peter Skoronski, the offensive lineman from Northwestern. Here's the blurb from Deontay. When it looked like Philadelphia would lose at least one of James Bradbury or Darius Slay, the assumption was that the Eagles would go after a young cornerback with the 10th pick. With both players returning, they can address other spots here. With two star receivers, a pair of corners, and their quarterback set to get a large extension, the Eagles' best move here is to address the trenches. In steps, Skoronski, who has the best tape of any lineman in this class and the versatility to play almost anywhere along the line. Skoronski has light feet, a high football IQ, and enough anchor and play strength to move defenders, even though power is not his calling card. Skoronski can fill a similar role to the one Cam Jurgens filled last season, spot starting in case of injuries, or he can win a starting job outright at guard before eventually moving back to tackle whenever Lane Johnson hangs up his cleats. And that's from Deontay. Ben, Skoronski is slowly becoming the go-to pick for mock drafters. And if you follow, like, basically the sharp mock drafts, right? You look at, like, the lead analysts, you know, the highest publications. You look at The Athletic. You look at ESPN, NFL Network. Skoronski is slowly becoming kind of like the chic pick for the Eagles over the last, like, 2-3 weeks. I think he's a guy we're going to be talking about a lot here as we lead up to draft day.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a good addition to most offensive line rooms, whether you want him inside or outside. But keep looking to the future, and I think the Eagles have always done that. And I think back to picks like Isaac Seumalo, that you didn't particularly have a spot for him as a rookie, but a guy can play a multitude of positions, versatile presence, and eventually is going to be an incumbent starter for years and years. So having some long-term projections and a long-term view on some of these players is important, despite your want to be competitive right now. So look down the road from Lane Johnson in 2 years or 3 years, or who's going to be the future Jason Kelce and how you're going to shuffle that offensive line. I think Skoronski is going to be a great pick here, whether he has a spot to start in 2023 or not. I know the 10th overall pick may, you know, suggest to some fans, well, why not get someone to contribute right now that we can use? The near and far conversation is a philosophical one. It's okay to look down the road. And one thing I want to propose to you, how much different is Skoronski from a Jack Driscoll type?
Yeah, he's definitely that kind of like kind of skill set, right? In terms of like, all right, he can play tackle guard. He's not the most powerful, but he's just like a really technically sound player. I think when you look at the way that Skoronski wins, I mean, he obviously has been a better college player than what Driscoll was. But I think if you're talking like types, it's kind of like the DeMario Douglas, Zay Flowers. Like, okay, if you miss on this guy in round one, like this is your day three version. I think that's, you could make that comparison between those players.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. You know, it's a slightly shorter profile, but a guy you can trust to fill in at any time, as Driscoll has had to at guard and tackle, and has looked serviceable doing it. I know fans may then say, well, you're talking about Driscoll, you're talking about Seumalo. These are middle round types of picks. How would you feel about taking that guy at the 10th overall? Well, Skoronski's a higher level version of those guys, and this is where in the draft you find and take those players. I got news for you. Prospects of his level and his caliber aren't around in the second and third. So if you need one and you covered that spot, you better go get it while it's there.
Let's go to the guys that are going off the board in this area too. So the three that went off the board just before, the Las Vegas Raiders, well, they select quarterback Will Levis. So all the quarterbacks go in the top seven in this mock from those guys. Number eight, the Atlanta Falcons select Tyree Wilson, the pass rusher from Texas Tech. At number nine, the Chicago Bears select Ohio State tackle Parrish Johnson. Then the Eagles take the tackle, Peter Skoronski. And then you get this run of tackles is just insane here, Ben. So you had Paris Johnson at 9, Skoronski at 10, and then the Tennessee Titans, they take Darnell Wright at 11. The Texans take Broderick Jones, the left tackle from Georgia. They take him at number 12. And then the Jets, they take a tackle. They take Oklahoma's Anton Harrison. So four tackles off the board right in a row. Just from this group of six players, your biggest surprise from that group?
It's got to be Anton Harrison, as that's the highest we've seen him. But I absolutely think this is going to happen, Fran. Jolt all those guys up, because there's a need for tackles in the NFL, and there is a major drop-off, in my opinion, after the first six or seven as far as finding guys that are starting caliber day one. I think there's a bit of a tier drop-off with some of those next waves, so I think these guys are really going to get bumped up. This is the highest we've seen them bumped up. We've seen the Darnells and the Antons go at the end of round one. When it's all said and done, I expect them to go throughout the middle of round one. This is slightly higher than I thought, but an Anton Harrison, two-year starter at tackle with light feet and is 21 years old, this is where these types of prospects go, because there isn't a guy in the second round that's like that. So if you need one, you better go get it.
So let me ask you this question, okay? Because we talked about this last week. I forget which mock draft we did a week ago, but there was like a run on corners started at like 8, right? And it was like two or three corners that went in a cluster. I think there are three positions where you look at like this 7, 8, 9 turn and say like, okay, this is where a run on a position is going to start. And it feels like it's either going to be pass rushers, tackles, or corners. Which one do you think is most likely? Here is the tackles. Last week it was the corners, and there are certainly simulations where it's pass rushers, right, where it's Tyree Wilson and Nolan Smith and Lucas Van Ness and Miles Murphy, and those guys start piling off the board, right? So of those three, what do you think is most likely? Or maybe there's another one that kind of pops to mind.
If you I was think just about to say, Fran, because honestly, I truly believe the conversation is edges, tackles, corners, receivers.
Yep.
And then you have to weigh the positional depth. Deep corner group. Deep receiver group, deep edge group. What did I just talk about with tackles? Major drop-off. That's why these guys are going to go in the middle of the first round. When you're doing that comparative analysis on, should we take a Joey Porter Jr. here? Should we take a Quentin Johnston here? I can find you a round two version of those guys that is somewhat comparable. I don't think I could find you a round two version of Darnell Wright or Broderick Jones or Anton Harrison. And when you're comparing those guys to a Jackson Smith or a Zay Flowers type, I can find types of receivers like that on day two, in my opinion. Same thing with some of the edges. This is a spot you're going to be looking at the Van Nesses and the Nolan Smiths, the Miles Murphys and Will McDonalds and Derek Hall and Ojulari's. And I'm just listing. Well, all those guys aren't going in round one. There's going to be some good edges to go in round two as well. So you need to weigh the positional depth when you're kind of seeing and projecting forward these guys in the middle of the first round.
Yeah, it's like, okay, would you rather have like Devin Witherspoon in the first round with Isaiah Foskey at the beginning of round two, or would you rather have Lucas Van Ness and Garrett Williams, right? You start like having those kind of conversations, and I think those are the ones that everybody in the NFL is going to be having at that spot. It's like, all right, if those are positions that we are targeting, you're having those kind of conversations, and when you have that kind of drop-off, that's what can lead to some of these runs. Let's go to, for me, actually, Broderick Jones. That would be the most surprising for me, going 12 to Houston, especially. I mean, we talked about the tackle depth that Houston does have. You've got Titus Howard, who has played some guard, and you say, okay, maybe we slide him back inside. It does feel like he's kind of settled in at right tackle. They just made Tunsil, obviously, the highest paid left tackle.
Has Broderick played right at all?
I think he was a spot guy at times, but no, I don't think so. So I guess you're kicking him inside if that's the case.
That redshirt year, he might have had some spot snaps there.
Right. I'd have to go look. But I think, that to me was the biggest surprise of that group. All right, let's go to the Eagles' next pick here. Number 30.
Two games as a redshirt, all at right tackle. But it was all at 20, right tackle. 25 total snaps.
25 snaps. Okay, so not a ton there. But again, you're projecting a little bit, because then you're going to move Howard, so you got to try and make that work. All right, so the pick for the Eagles here at number 30, Brian Bresee, the defensive tackle from Clemson. Here's the blurb from Deontay Lee. The Eagles address a loss of defensive depth with Bresee, and he and Jordan Davis position themselves as the next generation replacements for Javon Hargrave and Fletcher Cox. Objectively, Bresee underperformed given his status as a top high school recruit and starter since his freshman year, but his injuries and the depth death of his sister, bought some fits and starts to his college career. At his best, Brezzi is explosive and strong, and Philadelphia can use him without needing him to be an every-down contributor right out of the gate. And then again, that's the blurb from Deontay. Ben, you and I have been on the Brezzi bandwagon going back to the summer through the fall. We've been high on him, like in the top 15, top 12. You and I repeatedly were like, yeah, we feel like he's that kind of player. It does seem less and less likely that he's going to go that high just because of some of the circumstances surrounding this past year, with him that Deontay kind of referenced there. But a great landing spot there for Brezzi at number 30.
Yeah, and I think he's getting kind of caught in the weeds with some other guys. Like the Kalijah Kancey conversation has obviously been lit on fire the last 2 months, and he's being consistently projected in the first round. And, you know, that's going to come at the expense of some other trench guys. And that seems like it's been a Brezzi. It's been a little Miles Murphy and some other guys falling. But I like Brezzi's versatility. I think he'd be a great fit here as the Eagles have some holes to plug with the loss of a Javon Hargrave and trying to get younger and I'll cross that defensive front. I really like Brian Brezzi. And I didn't care how he tested. I don't think he's an exceptional athlete. But you know who's not an exceptional athlete? Jeffrey Simmons. You know, this is a guy that wins with heavy hands, shock, gets across the line of scrimmage with the first step, and just beats you up across the line of scrimmage. I think that's going to be Brezzi. And I know he came on the scene as a true freshman and annihilated some NFL-level Ohio State offensive linemen in the playoff game. He went through some life stuff for the past few years, as you had mentioned, the injury, the family stuff. So I hope his best days are ahead of him. And I still remember those true freshman snaps. And I think he could do it, coming on Sundays.
Well, here are the guys that went off the board in that area. The Dallas Cowboys at 26, they select Utah tight end Dalton Kincaid. 27, the Buffalo Bills, they select offensive guard Osiris Torrance from the University of Florida. At 28, the Cincinnati Bengals, they push the Bijan Robinson button. They take the talented running back from Texas. At 29, the New Orleans Saints, they go defensive tackle. They select Kalijah Kancey from Pitt. And the run on D tackles here to close out round one, the Kansas City Chiefs, they select Michigan's Mazi Smith, the defensive tackle from the Michigan Wolverines. So, Ben, of those six picks, which one do you think is most likely? What's the best fit for in your mind of those six picks?
I think Osiris Torrance going to the Bills. I love them going to the offensive line well and trying to keep Josh Allen upright, maybe continue to, you know, want to run the ball a little bit more and take some pressure off of Josh Allen. But this is a 2022 Bills team that survived, I think, with Ryan Bates at right guard most of the season. So I think they want to get bigger, a little bit firmer, a little tougher there. And I think an Osiris Torrance to a playoff contending team with a franchise quarterback, don't forget to keep that guy upright. He's not just going to be superhero shredding off D linemen his entire career. So you want to make sure you have some big uglies in front of him. I think Osiris Torrance would be a really nice fit on the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, to me, Kalijah Kancey with the Saints, I think makes a lot of sense. You look at, you know, obviously they've been big with kind of kicking defensive ends inside, but to that point, they're okay with kind of smaller guys on the interior, right, when they get into those passing downs. I think Kancey does make some sense there. They lose David Onyemata. I think Kancey has a similar kind of body type to Onyemata and can kind of replace that role one for one, certainly within that defensive structure. Last question here. Your favorite player team fit in this mock draft?
Probably be Jaxon Smith-Njigba to the Giants at 25, not only for a value pick, as I think he's the number one receiver in this class, and to get him at the 25th overall pick is really exciting, but just giving Daniel Jones a great separator and a great security blanket over the middle of the field. We're going to get Wandell back and healthy, a little more electric, a little bit more gadgety with stuff, but we need a guy we can trust on third down to separate against man coverage and give the quarterback confidence he's going to be there. So I love the fit, I love the need, I love the value, checking a lot of boxes, and I think that's what the Giants are going to be aiming for at the end of round one.
For me, I'm going to go with Joey Porter Jr., the corner from Penn State, going to the Detroit Lions at number 18. And we talked about Joey Porter Jr. earlier with Greg, and we talked about, you know, the pluses and minuses, what he does well. And certainly you get him up on the line of scrimmage, makes a lot of sense. And it just so happens that the Tennessee Titans, or the Detroit Lions, rather, ton of press coverage last year out in Detroit. Aaron Glenn likes those corners to be really, really aggressive. You look at that coaching staff, okay, and there's some nice ties there. The wide receiver coach, Antoine Randall-El, he was teammate nice. of Joey Porter Jr., or of Joey Porter Sr., rather, with the Steelers. And that's a coaching staff that is, like, littered with NFL alumni, right? And so I feel like getting a legacy player certainly kind of fits the identity of that defense. I think when you look at Joey Porter Jr., too, the other big one, they just hired a new defensive line coach, John Scott. Any ideas where he coached last year, Ben?
No clue.
He coached at Penn State. And so when you look at so you got a little coach tie-in.
And I guess one other chip to the equation there is the Lions being very aggressive this offseason to revamp the secondary. Already spent some money on Emmanuel Mosley, Cam Sutton, C.J. Gardner-Johnson. There is a huge bullseye on Jeff Okudah to develop and be a little more consistent. This could be a great pick and a Joey Porter Jr. just to find some snaps behind those starters, and maybe he's that future shutdown corner in a year or two.
Yeah, I think that this one just makes so much sense. You're looking at a team that, they added Cam Sutton, but Sutton has played inside plenty over the course of his career. I think that pick makes a ton of sense.
And they did not tackle well on the back end. And you know Joey Porter's bringing a physical presence and a willingness to get the ball carrier down. He's going to be a Dan Campbell type of corner.
Yeah. I love it. Well, Ben, great stuff as always. Maybe next week we'll do the round one, day three version. But if not, we'll do it the week after right here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, so great stuff there from Ben. Let's now get to our question here in our draft mailbag segment. And again, the best way to reach us here to get into this segment, head on over to Apple Podcasts. Leave us the question in the comment box, just like JAL1985 did, who left us a 5-star review with this question saying, this is a must listen if you follow the draft. I love this podcast. Really good scouting advice to help you learn how to scout players. Love the diverse opinions and how things are not an echo chamber. JAL, I appreciate that. The question here, is there a better fit for Jack Campbell than the New England Patriots? It feels like he was meant for them. And I do agree. I think that Jack Campbell makes a lot of sense. The Iowa Hawkeyes always will have a home there in New England. That relationship between Kirk Ferentz and Bill Belichick is alive and well. So Jack Campbell definitely could end up in New England. But honestly, I think that Jack Campbell, he's going to be a good fit for a lot of teams. Yeah, I know Daniel Jeremiah kind of floated the idea of the Buffalo Bills towards the end of round one having interest in Jack Campbell. They just lost Tremaine Edmonds in free agency. Just like Edmonds, Campbell is a big, rangy backer who can play sideline to sideline. Did not test quite to the same level that Edmonds did, but tested plenty well and has that size. He could be a true Mike in the middle. Matt Milano, who they just extended, he's not like that play caller in the middle of the defense. Whereas Campbell does have that skill set. But I think, honestly, any team that is going to play a lot of too high, where you need your guys to be able to play off blocks in the run game, you're not going to be plus in a numbers count from a run game standpoint. You could use Jack Campbell, and that's what I think is going to make him a good scheme fit anywhere. I do think that New England makes a ton of sense, and it would not shock me if they went that direction. But there are a bunch of backers I think make a lot of sense for New England. Noah Sewell from Oregon, he looks like a New England Patriot all day. Isaiah Moore, the linebacker from NC State, I think he looks like a New England Patriot all day. There are a couple other guys that come to mind as well. Shaka Hayward from Duke looks like a New England Patriot all day. So there are a bunch of guys at all different levels of the draft that I think make sense for the Patriots, but Jack Campbell, certainly one of those. So again, JAL, appreciate the question, appreciate the 5-star review. We'll be back next week here on the Journey of the Draft podcast. We've got Dane Brugler returning on Monday. We're going to talk through pass catchers, so wide receivers and tight ends. We're going to cover it right here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand.